chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, North Bay Slice and Jacks. I'm Tim Allen, just for a word on the board. S&P futures up a buck. Up a buck, Chuck. NASDAQ futures up 31. Dow futures down 45. Reason for that is Boeing's down 287. I got to believe it's because they're not getting certification for a while on their 777X, Manny. So these guys have problems like on every plane they're building now or what?
Sounds like it.
They're only building three planes. What, the 787, the 777? And the 737. We noticed the fiasco that was a 737. I think the 787 has been stopped twice now, hasn't it? Or three times. Now the 777, which they've been making for, what, 30 years? Now the new version of that's. Did all the old engineers like retire or die or something? Must be some.
Makes you wonder.
It does, doesn't it? So what, the world of sports, this weekend, boy, everybody's got massive opinions on this Bear Stadium thing. And did you read your UFO report? I figured you'd be a guy that was all over this thing.
I have not been following that. So now they're saying that UFOs are real, huh? Is that the latest?
Government can't explain 143 of 144 mysterious flying objects blamed limited data, but the 144th they claim is a balloon or something along those lines. So there you have it. So there's all these little videos and all kinds of stuff, and this one here in the video looks exactly like the little guys who were popping around that Notre Dame game that I was in.
There you go.
Because the immortal words of my buddy Beldo, of course, they always fly into lightning. That's how they recharge. Everybody knows that. Now, did you know that?
That's good.
Beldo had the one of the greatest lines ever regarding sports creatures. Of course, he was an absolute maven on everything to do with sports, boxing and everything. His younger brother played quarterback for Notre Dame and Dallas, has a national championship ring and a Super Bowl ring. And didn't, I don't think, he's a terrific guy and a hell of a quarterback. He played for the, on a trading floor. There used to be a big touch football league. And of course, he went out there and played quarterback and duh, he was the best one anybody ever saw, right? Even though he was third string for the Cowboys, so somehow or another we were in there talking one day about people who highest paid state employee in every state, right? Well, of course, in the 50 states, I'm going to say, I don't know, I'm taking a stab here, 38 to 40 of them, the highest paid knucklehead is either the football coach or the basketball coach, right? Not like the chief of surgery or anything like that. It's like the University of Illinois or Wisconsin. So there's like 8 to 10 to 12 states where somebody who's like the chief of surgery at like, you know, the South Dakota, University of South Dakota hospitals or something actually makes more than the football coach. So I was mentioning this to Beldo and he goes, why would anybody want to live in one of those states? Now I could see one of your buddies saying something like that. What do you think?
That's pretty good.
Yeah, why would anybody want to live there when they're dumb enough to pay somebody operating on somebody more than the football coach? It's all a question of point of view, right, Manny?
That's right.
So yeah, somebody's pictures are pretty cool on these things. They all kind of look the same. They all look like they're not really saucers. They're just something that don't show any like exhaust or anything coming out of them.
They look like unidentified flying objects.
Well, that's what they are.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what. There you go. We have no clear indications that there is any non-terrestrial explanation for them, but we will go wherever the data takes us. So then they just come back and say, we don't have any idea. And I'm like, now the big question to you is, what are they doing here? Assuming they're here. Is it humor watching us that there's somebody on some planet is laughing, is fanning off or what?
I don't know. I assume that, that they're similar to us.
They're using us as a tax haven?
It's possible. But I assume if there is life on other planets, that they're very similar to our life. They might be either obviously they would probably be ahead of us in technology.
I hope they're ahead of us in government. Just saying.
In the movies, they're always like some sort of crazy like dictatorship. They're not like us in government in the movies. Now I don't know what they would be like in real life.
Well, then you ever watch? I'm gonna have to ask it. Even though I know it's way before your time, did you ever watch The Day the Earth Stood Still?
I did not see that movie. I think it came out like 60 years ago, but I'm familiar with it.
I'm gonna say that I actually don't have it, so it's not like I can invite you over and have you watch it. But I'm gonna say you and Jill should watch it. It's going to move slow.
Actually, I was wrong. It came out 70 years ago.
70 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I was way off.
But you know what? If you watched it, you would say, first of all, but as a period piece, you would probably say, self, this is exactly like how people would act today. I mean, the guy lands in his huge saucer right across the street from the White House. What's that park? The name of the park across the street? It's not the mall, but there's like a big park across the one side.
It's like the Potomac Park or something. I don't know.
It's where all the veterans were. You know,
Lafayette Park.
Yeah,
or Lafayette Square.
Yeah, it's where the veterans all were after World War One guys and MacArthur came in and burned them all out and stuff from Roosevelt.
Yeah, it's Lafayette Square.
Yeah, it's anyway. There's a bunch of stuff going there, but he lands there, and of course, now the guy makes it all the way across wherever the hell he's coming from, right? So, of course, every policeman is ringed around the place with their guns drawn. with like a few tanks and a bunch of stuff out there. Like, okay, like the guy couldn't have smoked them if he wanted to, right? I mean, the logic is of course. No, if he would have showed up and said, we really need a tax oasis, I bet everybody would have understood, right? But instead, he wanders out and he's got this huge robot, Gort. So he walks out and of course, everybody's like, you know, he pulls out a thing from his pocket, which is supposed to be a gift for the president. Of course, one of the cops shoots him, right? So down he goes. And out comes this massive robot. So now, of course, everybody's afraid. So the robot hits some kind of beam, and every gun in everybody's hand and every tank, anything that's metal around the place, immediately like starts to melt. So all these idiots drop their guns, and they hop out of the tanks because the tank's melting. So anyway, he tells Gort to stand down, and they close it, and the door to the ship closes, and Gort's just standing there, this big huge robot. So they take him to the hospital, and because he wants to get to know the people. And of course, every idiot is now using a drill to try and figure out what the thing's made out of, and they're trying to drill the robot that just could have killed everybody in a nanosecond. They're trying to drill into the it is so classic human that. I mean, we would be doing the exact same thing today.
Of course.
Meanwhile, the guy, anyway, but it goes on to where he tries to get a meeting of all the heads of state saying, look, we don't care what you guys do with your petty wars as long as you stop, as long as you kill each other. You probably shouldn't be doing that, but oh, by the way, if that's what you're doing, you can knock yourself out. But if you start bringing your atomic weapons out to state in space and you start messing with anybody else, we're basically going to liquidate the place. So he couldn't. None of the presidents could even meet. So he ends up at the end of the thing. I don't want to tell the end. He ends up meeting with a bunch of scientists and stuff. But his point was, he walks over and he actually lives with a family for a while, just to try and find out what the humans are okay. But he basically comes to the conclusion that humans are okay, but their governments are all bleeped up. is that about the same conclusion you come to today, or what?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the robot was classic, and what the hell was the name of the lady was in it? There was one line where they shot him down, and he was like dead. So she had to go get the robot and give him, it was Gort something something. So Gort walks down the street, and of course nobody can mess with Gort, and he comes and gets him and like recharges the body and brings him back from whatever state he was in. Everybody thought he was dead. But he was now he's pissed off, you know, because they shot him. He's basically, you guys messing with anybody in state, out in space, so we're gonna like fry you. And Gort's gonna do it. I'm not even gonna waste my time. We're just gonna send the robot to do it. Everybody's like, but I mean, it's a classic film in a sense that just how people would behave. And you know, we'd do the exact same thing. We'd surround the thing with a bunch of people with stuff that wouldn't do any good. You know, the usual crap.
Yeah.
I mean,
like anyway. We address every problem. We surround it with stuff that won't do any good.
Yeah. And,
But at least it shows that we're trying to solve it.
Yeah, we're doing something. So here I'm looking at the... I don't know why I do this every week, though, because every morning when I'm waiting for you, all I do is hear this stuff. This is remarkable. Yesterday on Sunday, God's sake, 63rd and Artesian, which is, I'm going to say, it's right where St. Rita High School used to be. It's now actually it was at Claremont. So Artesian's one block west of Western. 63, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people shot. 10:55 last night. If this was in, like, Austin, Texas, this would be national news for how long? 8 people here?
At least for a day.
Yeah, I mean, this is... it's so recent that we don't know if anybody, if they're, what, if they're males or females. There's nothing but a bunch of question marks. This is on a Sunday night. We're warming up. Saturday, well, of course, it rained on Saturday. Let's see, we've got 2 people down at 79th Street. That's nothing. 2 people on 15th Street. So we don't, you know, here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 8:45 p.m., 2000 East 71st Street. So we got a 4 and an 8 this week. That's not as good. Last week we had, what, an 8 and a 10?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so this weekend is, you know, eh. So we only got, what, 1, 2, 3, 4 deaths on Saturday night. Here we go, 200 South Wabash in the Loop at 1 in the morning. What in God's name do you do in the Loop at 1 in the morning when all the bars close, what, 12 now or something? Or are they back open until later?
I think if we're fully open, they're open until as late as they want to be.
You're probably right, but I thought they... Did they go back to being 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock?
As far as I know. I haven't been out that late in a while, but...
No, me neither.
What bars are at 200 South Wabash?
There's
like nothing at 200 South Wabash.
Nothing. Just this world, just like the dorms are and stuff. Here we go, 1200 North Ashland. That's kind of close to home.
Yeah.
120 in the morning, mail 20. And then Friday night, we got 1, 2, 3, 4 nailed at 70th in Indiana. I don't know, man. We're nipping around the edges here. Is this because of economics or what is this? It can't be for economics. I mean, you don't shoot people because you're broke. I mean, you know, people don't shoot people during a depression. I mean, I don't know what it all is here. And I was reading something last night about murder in the U.S. and guns. I know you're feeling on guns, and I pretty much am right close with you on that. But this guy wrote an article, and it was reasonably, it made sense. He goes, everybody thinks everybody in the U.S. is just murder happy. And he said, there's like 5 or 6 big cities where everybody gets killed. Because if you look at the state of Illinois, people don't shoot each other in Galesburg every Friday night. It's in Chicago. It's gang related. It's, you know, I don't know if it's ethnic, if it's education, whatever it is. He goes, that doesn't happen anywhere else in the state. It's in Chicago, and it's in 3 neighborhoods. I don't know, it's all spreading all over. You know, and you know what? I'm sure that you can find some mass shootings at schools in small towns, but he's basically right. It is very localized. I mean, how many murders do they have a night in South Dakota or North Dakota? I don't think very many. There's more guns there per person than there are here, right?
Yeah.
So the guys with the gun guys, it's not like they don't have a point. I mean, it's not like the guns jump out of people's closets and go shoot people without being held by somebody.
That's correct.
I don't know. It's just
I don't have any solutions for you.
The idea that somewhere along the line, I mean, it's I don't know if you ever, you probably don't, but I sometimes on some of these old TV shows, I'll watch them on YouTube, right? Because I watched the shows when they were later when I was growing up, but I didn't really get like the first few because I was too young, right? So somewhere or another, I watched the first maybe 10 shows of Gunsmoke. When Matt Dillon was real young, Kitty was real young, and Doc always looked old. Although I don't think he was much younger than the rest of, or older than the rest of them. I don't know how many, starts with him out in the cemetery, and I never knew that. And it'd be like a monologue for a couple minutes where he's talking about what is with these people. They come to town, they can't essentially behave. They pull their guns, they try and kill somebody, and it forces me to do something to them. And now here they are. Basically, what a waste. And what are we doing? I don't like pulling the trigger on anybody, and yet they leave me no choice. And here they are, this god-awful place called Boot Hill. You know, not even a gravestone. And he's talking about what causes people. You know, I don't know, no matter what, if you look through society the whole way, whether people are rich, poor, or whatever, obviously poor, I don't know if there's that big of a correlation between poor and rich. I mean, somebody would have to do that other than me. Always seems to be somebody, some percentage of the population that's just a bad apple. You'll see a family with 10 kids, 9 of them are fine, go to college, have a family, never cause any trouble, and the 10th one is in and out of jail. You can't tell me that they were treated differently than the other 9. Or the genes obviously aren't any different. Yet somehow, some way, there's always some people that are just, you know, some percentage. I mean, look at Leopold and Loeb. I mean, that's a story. I don't know if you ever heard of that. But they were two Jewish kids. They had money from the University of Chicago. And they wanted to see if they could pull off the perfect crime. And they killed some guy just to see if they could do it. And they ended up getting caught because one of them left his glasses there, and they traced the glasses or something. I mean, this is before I was born.
Wow.
But I mean, there's the idea that you don't have to essentially find the bad guys and stop them from doing what they're doing at every level, whether it's in my business, whether it's in, there's always somebody who feels that they're smarter, or, you know, some people aren't violent, they just steal, but other people they like being violent. I mean, there's some people that like, you know, killing animals when they're a kid. I never did. You know, that type of thing. I mean, you can't say that.
Some people like killing animals when they're adults.
Yeah, well, yeah. But I mean, what you this whole idea that it's everybody else's fault. I just don't buy that, man. I understand that if people have a better economic issue, I mean, you're not going to steal a loaf of bread if you have a loaf of bread. That part I get. But that's not what we're talking here, right? We're not talking here at all like that. We're talking about 13, 14-year-olds carrying guns from guys that are 18, 19, and they're out shooting people. And everybody thinks that somehow or another that, you know, and somehow or another it's parenting. I mean, you're not supposed to say what's wrong with the parents. I mean, I never was running down an alley carrying somebody's gun at age 13. I mean, are there any parents? I mean, do they care? I mean, are they able, or what are they doing? I mean, why do people have kids they can't take care of in this day and age when birth control's around for 60 years, for God's sake? There's an awful lot of stuff wrong, but to constantly blame it on, quote, society. I mean, the people that are capable of doing that need to be put away. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, I don't see any other way, do you? And yet, people are debating that now. Oh, no, man, they're really good people. No, they're not. I mean,
I think you can both be right. I think you're right. If you shoot somebody, then, sorry, you're going to jail. That's the way it is. Whether you're corrupted when you were a kid, whether your parents were on crack, whether, you know, whatever the case may be, you were poor and you had to rob a liquor store for money so you could buy food for your little sister. Whatever your scenario was, if you start shooting people and killing people, you're going to go to jail. But doesn't mean there's not reasons that put people in those situations.
Well, that's right. But
so it's a matter of, you know, are you going to solve the issues for the 15-year-old today? No, but can you work towards solving the issues for the 15-year-old of tomorrow? That's the idea.
Well, without a doubt, but what I'm saying is, no matter what, if you had perfect world for everybody, you'd still get people that seem that they can get around it somehow. You know,
there's always going to be bad people.
We wonder that.
But usually, you find that the bad people were messed up when they were kids. It's sort of like when people say there's no such thing as a bad dog, there's just bad owners.
Oh, yeah, there's bad dogs.
There are some bad dogs, but the majority of dogs, if you raise them right at a very young age and, you know, they're not abused, like, you might adopt a dog and you're like, God, this is just a bad dog, but you don't know. That dog could have been thrown out of car before you got it,
right,
and it's completely messed up. It's very rare that you get a dog that has a perfect, upbringing that is still a bad dog.
Right.
It's just very rare, and I think people are pretty much the same way. Yes, there could be bad apples here and there, but for the most part, all of them were messed up when they were kids, had some sort of mental health, they were abused sexually or physically, or something happened.
There's a lot more of that going on.
Parents were on drugs. Yeah, there's then they're 21 and they end up blowing up a building, or, you know, going, shooting someone out of her car, whatever they end up doing, and you're like, God, this is just a bad guy, which, well, he is a bad guy, but there's probably 10 things that happened to him in his development years that screwed him up.
But there are people who had the world's worst life and realize the solution isn't shooting somebody else.
But I think that's more of the exception than the rule.
You know, I, as I get older, I wonder, man, if you drive down the expressway like I've done my whole life, I'm doing these things more than most people. There's always going to be, if you ever see like 30 people pat, if you ever see, you used to be able to, if you ever see a cop with a guy pulled over, all right, you know, which of course you're never going to see now, like for speeding or something. It's stunning that there'll be 80% of the people will be like you and me, who will say, oh God, the cops are out today, I better be careful. The other, I won't say 20%, that there's a strong fraction that says, he's busy, he can't get me, and they speed up. There's a group of people that if one guy hits the shoulder and is flying down the shoulder when there's traffic, three other guys are pissed off that guy's getting away with something they're not, and they jump in the lane. You can see that on the trading floor. If somebody had a scam, everybody else would say, I don't know why the hell the guy isn't caught yet. You know, I may not want to snitch on him, but I wish somebody else would, sort of thing. That mentality's around. And there'd be a few other people that say, well, man, if that guy gets away with it, so can I. I mean, there always are people immediately. That's why when, you know, you hear me and Lou talk a lot about if you start losing the total morality, if people decide that whether they should do something or not as to whether or not, quote, there's a law against it, and B, if you're going to get caught rather than is it right or wrong, you got a real problem, because I don't think any country has ever been designed in such a way, any church has ever been designed in such a way to where you can enforce rules. I mean, what I'm talking about is that you can have a society where if one out of 1,000 is a bad apple, I think society can deal with it. If it starts to be 1 out of 10, I don't see how you do.
Yeah.
I mean, really, the numbers are just too big. You know, you can't put an entire neighborhood where 15% of the people are in the drug trade, you can't put them all in jail, or you got some overcrowded jail, and then people push back on that, saying, what are all these people doing in jail? We're feeding all day. I mean, we had, you know, somebody who helped us out on the show for a while, who's, you know, had some issues with, somebody got, you know, arrested for murder, okay? Well, then as the story came out, there's these suburban areas now, Maddie, and this was never there when I was a kid. I mean, you know, or at least I didn't see it. There's these suburban areas now, we're not just talking about, you know, the bad neighborhoods in the city and black people. We're talking about all white people. And they're in these suburban schools that there's this undercurrent of the drugs, whereas people that are sort of in the drug trade, sort of push it a little bit, not really a dealer, but, oh, by the way, if they know a guy who's got some stuff, and if another guy wants some stuff, they're not full-time dealers, but they can get you something, and it'll take a little bit, they'll wet their beak if they do. There's all kinds of that crap going on, it seems to me, the more I learn about it. And, I don't know. Should all those people be in jail? Probably not. But what are they doing? I mean, it's not the society that I grew up in. I don't think it's where you grew up in. But I'm going to say that you see that in some of the areas out, not so much in Orland, but some of the areas there, certainly in the Northwest burbs, you'll see that where there's this constant, you know, it's everything's available, everybody's this. You know the guy, doesn't have, you know, 50 pounds of heroin in his house, but he can find a guy and be the middleman. There's a lot of these middlemen around. It's like people who take a bet down in the old days. And I don't know where you go with that. And the parents probably don't know or don't care. Probably don't know. They probably would care. But if we're talking about people that are 18, 19 years old, they're pretty hard to spank. What do you even do with stuff like, well, I mean, it, but I think it drags the economy down, man. I think it does. It drags the morality down, drags the economy down. And right now, I mean, we have the job numbers this week. We got Carol coming in on Friday. We'll have Mr. Flanagan here in a minute. Let's talk about some of these real estate things that are happening and the foreclosures. And we had a big conversation with some people Friday night. They're in the mortgage, what do you call the people that they toss them the non-performing mortgage and they decide to either work it out or boot the guy out or something. Their mortgage, I don't know the name for it. I momentarily forgot. But there's a lot of people that are being laid, it seems to me that there's an awful lot of people being laid off of jobs with salaries that you can live on, and everybody's pissed at them for not coming back to work at $10 an hour and making their sandwiches. I mean, is that what you're saying? I, I sort of am. I mean, I don't know. I hope
I'm not seeing that now. I definitely saw that in the heart of the pandemic, where a lot of people lost their jobs that, like you said, had the nice salaried job in operations or marketing or you know, whatever it was, and all that was available was the hourly job, where yeah, you can get a job, but if you came from working $75,000 a year with benefits and 401k and everything, the last thing you're going to want to do is take a $12 an hour job. But most of those people that I know anyway have been hired back at a similar type job that they lost, you know, 12 months ago or 8 months ago.
You actually keep more of an eye on this than I do. Aren't you surprised that, like, the first-time claims are still over 400?
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
I don't think, with all the help wanted signs on the low end, the people who are getting laid off can't be on the low end unless they're not showing up.
Well, if you talk to my brother, he says that the restaurants are trying to hire people back at the same wages as before the pandemic, and everyone's basically telling them, screw you, we're not coming back.
Well, look at what happened to the prices since then. What are they, 25% higher?
Yeah, and like literally, like Clay's like even negotiating for some of his friends that are, you know, maybe English isn't their first language and have been a dishwasher or a busboy or whatever, and basically go, you know, they're trying to get these guys back because they're the hardest position to fill right now is back of the house at restaurants. And I think Jeff Joseph said the same thing.
Yeah.
We had him on a couple weeks ago. And they're trying to offer him the same wages that they were off that they were paying him 2 years ago. And my brother is basically saying, screw you. They're not coming back. We know what the market is, and we're not taking anything less than that. And I think you're seeing a lot of that.
Well, what, just the thought of if you're sitting at home and you actually had to go get yourself a car, I don't see how you'd do it. I mean, Audrey's cousin, who, you know, actually runs a really nice area, a used car place, he can't find it. If you ask him to find you a car for $6,000, he's like, good luck with that.
Yeah, I bet.
They're up like 20%.
Well, no one in the city, obviously no one has one and or needs one, but yeah, if you're in an area where you need a car too, I can't even imagine what you're going through.
Well, I mean, if you're in Orland or Evergreen Park or Oak Lawn or Mount Prospect, there's no public transportation for you.
There's buses and trains.
Not to get you back and forth to the pizza place.
I mean, probably not.
I mean, our whole system is designed to get people for work downtown.
That's true.
I mean, if you're SP Futures up 3, NASDAQ Futures up 41, Dow Futures down a bit, so we're going to have a mixed day today, but we'll probably end up up. We've been an up move lately. We'll be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allies, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Jan Flanagan with us. Find further review, Maddie, of the murders. We had a four, these are shootings, a four, two fives, and an eight. On the weekend, and this is with a, when there's nobody gets shot for a while, they call it, on Saturday we had a 5 hour rain delay. Who knows what we could have done?
That's right.
We didn't have the rain delay.
Did those people all die, or did anyone
die? No, a couple of them died, but okay. It's all, you pull up in a car and you start blasting. So there was a video of that on the Tribune site. I don't know if you saw that.
I did not.
Pretty special. When people just got out of the car and started shooting. Of course, they missed everybody, but they, you know, just got out of the car with a couple of rifles and started firing away. S&P futures up 3, NASDAQ futures up 41, Dow futures down 15. In Europe, we've got the DAX down 13, the FTSE down 30. That's 0.4%. CAC around down 29. That's 0.4%. So slightly to the downside over there, nothing major. Nikkei down 18. Let's call that one flat. Shanghai down 1. Let's call that flat. Hang Seng down 19. That's pretty much flat for those guys. Hong Kong had a shortened trading day, so I'm not sure why that happened, but this is a review. Friday, Dow was up 237, S&P up 14, NASDAQ was down 9, so we had that kind of mix, but by and large, it was a pretty strong week to the upside. Matter of fact, I think everybody was up for the week, and I think S&P closed at a record, so yeah, that's a big week. U.S. 10-year, 1.51, the Bund, minus 0.16, which is more towards zero than it was Friday morning, even though today it's unchanged. Japan positive 0.06, UK positive 0.76. We've got oil down 7 cents, 73.98. Brent down 16 cents, 76.02. Natural gas up 3 cents, 3.52. I got to believe if they have any natural gas feeder units in the Northwest, they're all at, because they're what are they, Maddie, 40 degrees over normal in some areas? It can be 111, and a normal high is like 71 up there. Ugh. Well, most people don't even have air conditioners, I don't think. RBOB down 2 cents, 224. So when you're picking up gas, I got it at 309 or 307 yesterday. So we're talking about 80 cents premium to RBOB, which isn't bad. Now, of course, in the city, it's what, $4, Maddie? It's more like $1.70 premium. That's more. Gold down $1.70, 1776. Silver up 4 cents, 2613. Still can't get moving on the gold. Copper minus 2 cents to 426. And last but not least, Bitcoin up 1,400, 34,227. Somewhere near the top of the recent range, which is more like 29.5 to 36. We'll see if it breaks through. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a good start here on a Monday morning. Looks like no significant delays to speak of yet here at 6:38 local time. Edens and Kennedy are quiet. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good, too. Lakeshore Drive's quiet in both directions, too. It looks like the only crash in the area is on the northwest side. Cicero Avenue at Diversey, there's a crash. But everything else is all quiet out there. Weather today, cloudy early, and then we could have some thunderstorms roll in today as we continue this onslaught of rain that we've been getting. for the last several days, and will continue for the next couple of days at least, with spotted showers, a high of 77 today. Right now it's cloudy, still dry, and 66 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 109. Right now it's clear and 92. In sports, the White Sox split their doubleheader yesterday with Seattle. They continued Saturday's game that was suspended for rain, and White Sox lost that one 3-2 yesterday. And then in the nightcap, they beat the Mariners 7-5. Cubs were blown out by the Dodgers on Sunday Night Baseball, losing 7-1 last night. Cubs dropped 3 out of 4 in that four-game set in L.A. After winning Game 1, they dropped 3 in a row. Diamondbacks lost to the Padres 5-4. So as we take our Monday morning look at the Major League Baseball standings, neither team is playing very well between the Cubs and the White Sox. Sox have dropped 7 of their last 10. Cubs have dropped 6 of their last 10. But the White Sox remain in first place. They're 45-32, 2.5 games up on second place Cleveland. The Cubs are now 3 back of Milwaukee. The Brewers have won 5 in a row, while the Cubs have lost 3 in a row. But they play a series beginning tonight, so Cubs have a chance.
They'll be out 6 by Thursday.
It's very possible. And now Anthony Rizzo's out too, again, with back tightness to make things worse. But the Cubs are 42-36, 3 games behind Milwaukee in second place in the NL Central. Cubs are 3 up on Cincinnati and 5 up on St. Louis, so really both faded.
I don't think
as well.
Rizzo wanted to play anymore in that game on national TV. I think he's probably fine.
Yeah. Diamondbacks are in last place. They are 22-57, 29 games behind first place San Francisco. Lastly, NBA Western Conference Finals resume tonight, with the Suns having a chance to close it out for our Phoenix listeners and make the NBA Finals. I think for the first time since 1993 when they lost to the Bulls. Suns lead 3.
Well, what seed were they?
This year?
Yeah.
The 2 seed in the West.
Oh, they were 2, okay. Atlanta's the 5, right?
Atlanta's the 5 in the East,
well,
yeah.
If they get out, that'd be the first time a 5 got out in how many, a century?
I don't ever remember a 5 making it to the NBA Finals. Suns lead that series 3-1. They can close it out tonight in L.A. against the Clippers. It's a 6 p.m. Arizona time tip. Chief.
What, John, how are you?
Tom, I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing all right. Are we all packed and ready? Matty says that he's going to handle the show for a week. Well, you and I go out, and we're going to go to Roswell, and we're going to that place in Nevada and take selfies and stuff. So when one of these guys, these UFO guys, lands, we'll be experts, and we promise to put Matty in the picture. We'll get him in later, like one of the Stallings guys, so he can be considered an expert, too. So
I want the book deal, Tom.
You want the book deal? Matty wants to go on TV as the expert, as the expert on extraterrestrial life. You know there'll be somebody on there the minute somebody lands. Might as well be us. There's experts on everything. There's experts on the next life. If you say, if you want to have an expert on what's life after death, there'll be 15 people willing there to say they're experts for some cash. Might as well be us.
I find this whole news cycle very interesting about, you know, the UFO phenomenon, because it actually looks like the powers that be, the higher ups, are getting into the swing of things and starting to have some fun with it.
Well, were you
in the past? They just completely ignored it. It made anybody out who was even mentioning there was a possibility of this as a crank and, you know, a complete nutcase. And now it's like they're tweaking the public interest and saying, "Well, you know, we've got things to talk about here." So I don't know if that's, you know, if there's ever going to be any disclosures that will satisfy people who have felt for a long time that there's more to it than what we were told. But it is interesting to see that there is some kind of, you know, push and pull with it now. So,
well, were you at the Irish game where they were on TV?
No. No, I was looking at it last night, but I was in the news coverage of it.
Isn't that interesting? Look just like they look just like the ones that are in these pictures on CNBC. Dancing around, a lightning stroke. I mean, I think they're here for humor. They can't believe that we act like this, and then they just laugh their behind off. They've never seen anybody in the entire galaxy like us. This screwed up. What do you think, Matty? Is that their motivation? maybe they come here just to get their copy of Hey Jackass. How many people were shot over the weekend? I mean, but it sounds like it's funny, but it's sort of not. So I'm reading this thing yesterday. I sent it to you, both of you guys. Here's a guy who's got to be, this is Jeff Cox. Now, he's a CNBC guy. Good guy, but he's, you know, he's one of these, he's in the flow, right? You know, I mean, I'd love to have him on and talk to him about it because he can defend himself. But he's in the flow you can't, I don't listen to Fox enough. Well, maybe I don't want to listen to them, but Fox Business. But the guys on CNBC, by and large, they'll get a couple of guests on there, but nobody ever just takes the whip to the SEC or the Fed. Even though anybody who's read anything about monetary policy for the last, well, certainly since 1967, 68, every single time we've had a problem, the Fed has caused it. I mean, without a doubt, you look at the market run-ups and crashes, and you look at the money supply numbers, and you look at what the Fed has done, the Fed policy, to 6 to 12 months before, and absolutely they have caused it. Sometimes not knowing, sometimes not being careful, sometimes just being idiots. But this time on purpose. I mean, which makes it more sinister to me. But so he's talking about how this is the headline. Inflation looks bad now, but it's pretty much sticking to the script.
Yeah, I got that article, Tom, and my jaw dropped. I want to see the script.
Yeah, I want to see the script. And whose script? Otis from Lex Luthor's assistant who just died? In the view of some quarters, inflation is following the script, rising due to one-off bottlenecks and the product of a distorted comparison to a year-ago period. I shudder because, I mean, I remember 1973. I remember the gas lines and the inflation starting to percolate out like there was no tomorrow. Every single person attributed it to the Arab oil embargo and nothing else. And they were all wrong. They were all wrong. And here we are, however many years later, when that stuff, you know, was news you can go read on your internet. You don't have to go to the library anymore. It's right there. It's never a simple supply phenomenon. Never is. The personal consumption expenditures core index, excluding food and energy costs, which, by the way, is a 1973 thing that we're still doing now for whatever reason, because energy is not the problem now, is it? Rose 3.4% in May on a year-over-year basis, in line with Wall Street expectations, but also at the fastest increase since April of 1992. So as long as it's with somebody's expectations, it's following somebody's script, so it's okay. So in the near term, that notion that inflation is going to fade is of cold comfort to those who've gotten sacked with higher costs. Do you think?
There's a lot going on in those sentences, but I guess the thing, it really boils down to something like the UFO situation, too. It's like, yes, we know there are such things, but, you know, we are in control of this, and there's no need to panic about it, and we're not going to tell you much more than that. And I get the sense that whatever this script is, and I'm sure there is such a script, it's a lot worse. I mean, the consequences of it are a lot worse than anything we've seen. But they don't want to panic people into thinking that this has somehow happened because of a lack of oversight or somebody's mistake or some screw-up that will be, you know, pinned on somebody. So it's all about managing the fallout from a situation that is clearly, you know, obvious to the people in control. And they're not as upset by it as they, you know, you and I would be, but I think that's because they know they can manage the fallout in a way that we can't.
Well, the right guys have pricing power.
Right.
And the world is more concentrated now than it was in the early 70s. Under normal circumstances, as I'm quoting here, the recent spate of high inflation numbers would be cause for high alarm. So the fact that the guy they want to work for $10 an hour, the car they tried to buy at $5,000 is now, well, what's 17% on $5,000 would be almost $6,000, right? So,
yeah.
No, it would be cause for alarm, but now it's not. Okay, so I don't know why it wouldn't be. But in the presence of present COVID-era context, they were confirmation in some quarters that the inflation picture is doing little more than following the script. Again, the script. Rising due to one-off bottlenecks and the product of a distorted comparison to a year-ago period that saw much of the U.S. economy in shutdown mode. These comparisons aren't to a year ago. The CPI stuff goes back to whenever, right?
Right.
What's
right.
How was that a year ago period? We're not comparing one to the other. May saw another significant jump, according to the gauge that Fed officials like to say. By the way, did prices go down last year? I don't think they did.
Nope.
So why is giving a comparison there a wrong comparison? It's not like soybean prices went from, you know, $10 to $6, and now they're back to $8. To where you say, wait, if you go back 2 years, they're still down. That's not happened at all that I can see. Can you?
No. And again, to return to the script notion, if COVID and the lockdowns and everything were part of a script, which I think it's pretty clear now they were, because everybody certainly followed it, you know, it was a race to the bottom about it, then certainly, yes, this would seem to be following the script right now. It's doing exactly what everybody probably could see would do once you start meddling in consumption patterns and denying people access to goods and services and drive up the price of them. Of course, this is what the script will do. So, you know, in a sense, there's something funny about it that we're telling you that this is just what we planned to have happen, so there's no reason to think that something is out of step here, which, I mean, how many lies can you cram into that sentence?
Well, the you know, it's somewhat bizarre, is it? Even, you know, people who have not... Right now, you look at... I mean, obviously, the people Manny and I were talking about earlier, because his brother's in the food service industry and knows way more what's going on there than we do. Matter of fact, we would like to have on the show Manny talking about what his brother Clay sees, you know, in that industry, and how difficult it's going to be for people to get from $10 an hour to... Where are they trying to put them now, Manny? 12, 13, somewhere in there? It's not 15 or 16 yet,
right.
Is it? But when you look at the history of, and this is what, you know, if you look at a lot of the numbers, I'm going to say that number, help me here, Manny, because you know you're closer to the industry. I'm going to say if the $10 an hour was the magic bomb for getting your dishwasher or whatever, I'm going to say that's been the number for, what, 10 years?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like, you know, it was $5 10 years ago and these guys are up 100%. I mean, we're starting from, you know, a pretty low level. It's sort of like today if it rains and we get a flood, well, guess what? We're almost at flood level now. If somebody turns on their sprinkler, we're going to have a flood, right? So it's all about the history. The fact is, if these guys have been getting, you know, 3% and 4% raises every year for the last 20, the inflation we have now wouldn't be that big of a problem. But now people are saying, wait a minute, in the last month, the last year, the $10 an hour, which probably wasn't cutting it anyway, Manny, but now it's really not cutting it, right? But it's not all the last year, I don't think. Do you?
No, I would agree.
I mean, when you have an underclass, and I use that term, economic underclass, not intellectually or anything, that hasn't seen much of a... I mean, the numbers and the... you know, the debtclock.org that show the median wage $31,000 in 2000, and now it's like $37,000. That is about as sobering a number as you can find, isn't it, Jan? I mean,
yep.
Seemingly like whenever something has been a festering sore for a while, I was one of the most eye-opening books I've ever read was the Freedom from Fear by William Kennedy, because I'm supposed to be this economic genius, right? Which there is no such thing, because, I mean, well, I guess if you're a professor and you can have people doing all the research for you and you read that, you can be a genius, but I'm not there. But I was stunned at how much of, I always thought, I mean, when you think of the 20s, and what do you think? You think of the Roaring 20s, right? You go to the Auburn Duesenberg Cord Museum and you see every year these cars got more spectacular than the year before, to the point where, you know, even some of our friends could get a date driving around in one of those things, right? but I mean, you know, you saw this incredible move forward in A, the markets up till 29, and B, just general stuff. I mean the move forward in aviation in that 10 years, the move forward in automobile. I mean, you looked at a car from in 1920 versus a car in 1929. I mean, you think there's innovation now. I mean, look at, I mean, those things, I mean, the dramatic change was something like you wouldn't believe, right, Jan?
Oh, yeah. And so many things that we can't even imagine a car not having. But a lot of cars in 1920 didn't have I mean, they really were barely sealed compartments. Most of them had some kind of roll-down windows, so you get completely drenched in any kind of a rainstorm. They didn't have heaters, a lot of them. They certainly didn't have radios. Nobody had a radio, really, in 1920 at all. So by 1930, you had, you know, car radios were a fact. You had all sorts of creature comforts that made cars, you know, the sort of things people really aspired to as a thing to tool around in and get looks and get dates and everything else. It was a phenomenal change, really.
Well, I mean, I don't know what a 1921 Ford Model A could do, 40 miles an hour, 35? Compare that to a 1931 Auburn or Duesenberg, could do like 110. They go as fast as the cars today. Well, but not like a Porsche or something, but, you know, pretty much. Anyway, but, you know, he drew a picture, William Kennedy, that virtually 50, 60% of the economy never grew out of the depression that was, or recession that was in the teens, the 1918 or whatever, which one of those years, you probably know the year better than me. But there was a panic in there. And the agricultural area, which was easily half the economy, was in a depression, pretty much, all that whole time. So when the 29 crash happened, half the economy, or maybe more, was already there. So right now, I mean, if we were to strip, just like the article I was reading this weekend, if you were to strip the murders out of the top five murder cities, the rest of the country is pretty peaceful, you know, even with all the guns they have. I mean, I'm not a gun guy, but I'm not so sure that the guy writing the article wasn't correct about that. Now, I mean, right now, if you were to strip the income of, you know, the top half a percent, or actually the top probably 500 people off the last 15 years, I think you got a problem in terms of everybody else's growth. And especially if you took the stock market out of it, the wealth coming out of the stock market, especially in the last few years, I don't see the salary increases and things like that across the board that you would expect in a growing economy, would you?
No. I mean, the thing about food service, too, like you and Matt were talking earlier, there are restaurants opening, as fantastic as it may seem. Gordon Ramsay is supposed to have a restaurant in Chicago, and you know, high-end stuff, I think, will probably increase in its opulence and its kind of attractiveness to the people who could afford it. But the average person isn't going to go dine in a place like that the way you used to dine before. And what I'm noticing now, and I watch free TV, I don't have cable, so maybe this is happening on cable too, but the advertising that I see now has changed so dramatically in pushing people's consumption patterns for food. I'm beginning to think, is it the demand that's driving this, or are people being forced into these choices? Practically every week I see a new company I never heard of hawking a delivery service for how to stock your refrigerator, how to get, you know, imperfect food that's rejected by somebody else, but we're going to give it to you for cheap and package it nicely and deliver it to your door, and you'll be able to survive on this, and you can put everything in a blender and make smoothies and survive on that. It seems like it's not just DoorDash and Grubhub now. It's about making people believe that the way to flourish and to survive economically is not to go out to eat, not even to go to an Applebee's, let alone a fast food place, but to just hunker down and, you know, buy into the styrofoam industry and eat your food, you know, that we send to you. We tell you what to eat, and you give people the illusion that this is stress-free for them, but it can't be cheap by anybody's standards, but it certainly would be cheaper than going out to a high-end restaurant. So is this what they want people to be attracted to? It certainly looks like they're pushing it in an aggressive way.
Sort of like Chevy Chase when he looked at Bill Murray. I got a pool, a pond would be good for you.
It is.
It sort of is.
I wonder if this is because they sense that there is just no way we're going to return to pre-pandemic dining and entertainment patterns, and the sooner people get substitutes for that and are coddled into thinking that their life is better now than it was or could be.
Well, for some people it is.
Yeah.
For some people it is. I mean, and you end up, you can really sense, there's two things. I always used to like to go to the state fair in Milwaukee. and just wander through the slices and dices building where they're trying to sell you everything. Because you could tell by the what was being sold how good a year it was for the farmers. And this year, I don't think I've ever seen a more a split type of year. I mean, I was actually went to a well. Let's put it this way: I went to a wedding. The wedding was a while ago during COVID, so they had a party on Saturday. Won't say who or where, but let's put it this way: it was supposed to be a garden party, Matty, and they didn't listen to the meteorologist. You, they had beautiful tent, all kinds of stuff in the yard. Of course, everybody's huddled in the basement. Because it was pouring.
Who was this?
I'm not going to say.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to say. But I ended up talking to a few of the people there. And, you know, I don't know what it is. I almost feel like that I'm in the confessional and I'm the guy behind the screen because everybody tells me everything. I don't know why. But there's something about this lady's telling me how she runs this business. And they never missed a day. And, you know, they did fine and had actually a pretty good year, and how she's waiting on her like $150,000 check from the Employee Retention Act. And I'm like, okay, I don't think. By the end of the day, I mean, I've always looked at the resolution trust as a way to separate how you separated people's money from the people who used to have it to the people who now do. I'm going to say that if somehow or another we all went back to school, I'd be too old, but the and we had four or five young PhD students that we could order them what to do. This, when this history is written, how this has swung money from some people to another is something, it's spectacular. The businesses that, I'm not saying they shouldn't have, by the way, because the law is what the law is. And if it's written and with the way they're inflating the place, If you decided, well, I'm not going to take it, you probably are harming yourself and your company because the prices are going to be to the moon here pretty soon if they aren't already. But I mean, there's places that are getting hundreds of thousands of dollar checks that never missed a day. There's restaurants that had their best year that, that are getting a huge check. Well, other restaurants are closed and people are laid off, right, Maddie? I mean, have you ever seen anything more uneven in a world than last year's restaurant business? In terms of,
couldn't be more uneven.
Couldn't be. We couldn't imagine. We couldn't design it more uneven. I bet if we had your bro on here, he would want to do it. He could probably name places and money and how much. This firm, had an okay year. Everybody was, they paid everybody, or maybe they didn't. Maybe they laid a few people off because, maybe the bar was shut down, but the carryout was going okay, and how they got some, three huge checks from the government. This is when this is all said and done. There's all kinds of people at the end of the day here. It's going to be like 1929. If you were in the market, you were doing this. If you weren't, you weren't. That there's going to be high-end restaurants all over the place making money, John. And that the other guys, and plus, if you have any kind of a lease, I've been at a couple places where, I'm not a wine connoisseur of any sort. I like to have a glass once in a while, but I have a reasonable number of how much people are paying for stuff. And I've been paying $9 a glass at a couple of basically bars that I know the wine is $8 a bottle. Okay. as they used to say up at the First Stop Lounge, I may have pigeon, but I'm not a fish. How's that for a line, Betty? We may be pigeons, but we're not fish. I mean, we are fish. I mean, what can I, SP Futures up 2, NASDAQ Futures up 41. So they're covering the whole bottle with the first glass. That's special. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
You got a pool over there?
We have a pond in the back. We have a pool and a pond. A pond would be good for you.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Allen. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 1.25. NASDAQ futures up 38. Mr. Jan Flanagan with us. Have you guys been, first of all, as people I think on the, listen to the show regularly, and we have quite a few, the last thing I want to come up with is answers for people, because I really don't know the answers, but what I do like to do is at least let's all talk about the questions. Have either one of you guys read into this, Biden's tax plan could save some families nearly $15,000 a year in child care. You guys read any about this?
I haven't heard about that, but I have heard that there's a provision in it where if there's been an increase in an asset's value of at least $1 million, that the capital gains of like 40% will be taxable upon inheritance by as the next generation, not when the asset is sold, but just when it passes into the hands of a family owner, family member, and that will be a killer for a whole lot of families. And if such a thing is even being considered, I think you can kiss a whole huge slice of the real estate market right away, because people are going to have to dump stuff as soon as they inherit it just to pay the tax on it.
All right, I'm going to assume for a second, plus it's good radio to take the other side of the argument, I'm going to assume for the second that it's a negotiating ploy that's going to get the president and the people pushing it back to where they think we ought to be. And when I say this, for those who don't know maybe, if you and I buy IBM stock and bought it 40 years ago, and we bought it at, 20 sale, and IBM was never that low, so it's probably a bad example, but say we did, we bought it at 20, and now it's trading at 147, it's had some splits in there and so forth, but let's not go into that. If we were to sell it, we're going to have to pay the capital gains tax on 147 minus 20 times the amount of shares we have times whatever the capital gains is, which is, the half the regular rate or something, Jan, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
That's been around since, the rate changes and blah, 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 but it's a long-term thing, so there's always been a long-term capital gain rate that's less than ordinary income. Why there is, why there isn't, we could debate till the cows come home. But if you are, I won't say wealthy, but if your old man would have bought 100,000 shares of IBM at 20 and didn't sell it, and he croaks and he gives it to you, inherits it to you and, your brother and sister or whatever, maybe he didn't like your sister, so he gave it all to you or your brother, you not only get the stock, but now your basis becomes 147 today's date.
Right, stepped up.
nobody ever pays the tax on the 20 to the 147. If it's called a step up basis, and wealthier people who obviously found that it's more than most people, have been taking advantage of this for like a real long time. Same way if your old man leaves you the farm, and again, you don't want people selling farms and things like that, the family having to sell them, that if the old man leaves you the farm or the antique tractor or something, you get the step up basis. I mean, I don't know how it works in real estate as much, but I know how it works in stock, and that's what I do. And people for years are saying, hey, that sucks, basically. I mean, why does anybody not have to pay that $120 in tax? Because you didn't buy it at 147. Somebody bought it at 20. And there's a capital gains tax in there someplace. Now, granted, there's practical considerations. You probably don't know where your old man bought it. He probably, if he did buy it 40 or 50 years ago, he probably doesn't have the ticket. Now, of course, we could be intelligent people for once in our life and say, gee, I think Dad bought it in 1964. Well, even I or anybody here can go back and say, okay, where roughly was IBM traded in 1964? Looks like it averaged $30. Okay, we'll use that. I don't really care if it's 29 or 31, but it's not 147. So this has been something some people have tried to change for a real long time and haven't been able to do it. Okay, because it can't get through Congress. There's always a lobby. The people who have all this stock, they want to give it to their kids and have the kids never pay tax on it. They've had the other side of the lobby. So now the Democrats have lobbed in. I'll say the Democrats, but Biden have said, okay, what we want to do is the minute you give it to the son, he now has to pay 40% or 20% tax over the capital gain is on the 127 difference between the 20 and the 147 on day one. Now, I hope that they're not that stupid, Jen. And I hope that the idea is that the other side that doesn't want to change at all is going to be so outraged or frightened about that that the compromise position is, why don't we just transfer the original price to the new guy so at least somebody somewhere pays the tax on it. I'm hoping that's where it lands. Now, is that why the people from the UFOs are here? Because it won't land there and they want to laugh at it or what?
Well, it could just be a bargaining chip too, but I don't know if the state taxes have been talked about in any of this. As far as I know, this doesn't give you a rebate on your estate.
No, it has nothing to do with estates. It has to do with when the son sells it. So in other words, if my old man croaked today, croaked in 56, if he croaked today and gave me the IBM stock and I sold it tomorrow at 148, my capital gains tax is on a dollar, when in fact he bought it at 20, not 147. And I think most people would say, wait a minute, you know, how does that work? I mean, it doesn't pass the smell test. It never did, I don't think. Do you?
Right. But let's just say it's a family home, and it wouldn't be out of the question for a home in this kind of a world to appreciate $1 million over, say, 30 years, depending on where it's situated and how much you paid for it initially. And now, you know, according to this proposal, by acquiring it, and what if you want to live in the house? Well, you won't be able to live in the house if you can't afford the capital gains just because you passively inherit it upon the death of a parent. So you're going to have to liquidate it, get rid of it.
Well, I mean, but you're still thinking that you're going to have to liquidate it today. And what I'm saying is, I hope the compromise position is you just the basis transfers with it.
Well, that I can't vouch for. I'm not sure. So,
well, I mean, if your own
I mean, I think there are fair ways to get some sort of taxable event out of this without insisting that the only way to pay the tax is to get rid of the asset. I mean, that's what's happening with real estate taxes in Cook County.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is that for a long time, the people who felt that this was unfair, which I do, the step-up basis, tried to do it straight, you know, and said, look, we just want to have the step-up basis. We don't want to have the step-up basis, and we want you to carry the purchase price with it, all right? So, and it's never gone anywhere. It's been a 25-year fight, and they've gone anywhere. So now I think what they're trying to do is say, okay, if you don't like it that way, this is the way we're doing it. And they have both houses of Congress and maybe could do it. I don't think they could really. But the other side hopefully is going to say, all right, how about this? How about we just, in other words, if you have a house that costs $50,000 from your dad and now it's worth $1.5 million. I don't have any problems with just saying, okay, it's 50, you can live there for as long as you want, Jen. I don't have a problem with that. But someday, when you sell it for $1.6 million, the gain has been $1.1 million, not one, right?
Right, right. Oh, yeah, and I have no problem with it being capital gains, however you want to figure it, with stepped-up basis or whatever, when the asset is sold to a third party. There should be a consequence. I mean, there should be a taxable event then, but to really design it in such a way that you cannot own the asset, you don't even want to acquire it because the tax liability.
Oh no, yeah, I hope they don't go down that road. I mean, I would hope that the problem comes.
Yeah, I mean, that's just who would dream up such a thing and expect anybody to see that as anything other than just a way of destroying any kind of upward mobility for families.
Well, the problem comes, Jan, I think, is if you have a family that's fighting. And they have to sell it because the three kids can't agree on who gets it, and everybody wants their piece. Well, now you have to sell it, you know, day one because everybody wants their check.
Everybody has to pay their 40%.
Yeah, everybody's got to pay
whatever their return is.
Well, but it's not. It's still going to be a capital gain.
Right, right. But the idea is, if you were to be able to hang on to it, and maybe we would appreciate, say, in the next 10 years before you decide to sell it.
Right.
In the meantime, you have a place to live. And I think that's a fairer situation. I don't think that this having to give up your ownership right because the tax liability has descended on you immediately is fair in a family, anyway. But
well, you've walked right into annually we do this. It's the Chiefs five rules. I don't know if it's five or four, Maddie, to fix the economy. And give us more of a trickle up than a trickle down.
I was just going to use that term. I was thinking of it during the break. Remember trickle down economics?
Yeah. Trickle down.
It's always trickle up.
Oh, it's always, yeah. I mean, there's no such thing. But first of all, capital gains should be indexed. Right? If somebody bought a house 50 years ago for 100 grand and now sells it for 200, I got news for you. He didn't make any money. Right?
Right.
So there should be an index on it, especially now. I mean, that's why last week I don't know if you got any tweets, but I got some emails from people when I said inflation is the cruelest tax that there is. I mean, if all of a sudden now you have inflation comes flying in here, and your house that you paid 50 grand for, and 5 years later, well, 150 grand now, and 5 years later it's worth 200,000, but now the next one you're going to go buy is worth 200,000. I mean, houses are different because you can trade up. But say you couldn't, say it was an investment house, where'd you make any money, Jen? Where'd I miss?
Right,
you didn't make any money, and now these people are going to. That's why the biggest benefactor to inflation is the government, and everybody. And that's why when they lie to us like this, it's not like they're lying to us because they're not getting anything out of it. They're lying to us because. I mean, Dutch Reagan, everybody's hero. Oh man, the greatest president ever. Okay, how many tax in those days, Jan? There were how many different tax what do you call them? Different tax rates as
brackets,
you went up.
Yeah.
How brackets were there? There were like 20, weren't there?
Yeah.
Well, okay. So if even right now, even when we have what we have like 3 or 4 or 5, maybe I should know this. But I mean, if all of a sudden. You're making 75 grand a year, and you're in some tax bracket. And all of a sudden, 5 years from now, these idiots have the inflation is 100% in 5 years, which is right where we're heading toward. And you're making 150 grand. You're paying a higher slice to the government, aren't you?
Yep.
And you're not making any more money. So I mean, they are the biggest beneficiaries. Plus, if you bought an old car for 20 grand and the inflation's double, and now you sell it for 40, you owe these guys what? 8? Why do you owe them 8? You didn't make any dough.
Well, no, nobody gets ahead in a system like that, and that's the system we have, really.
Well, the people who get ahead of it is the government.
Right.
They keep going up and up. That's why people who were making, you know, 15 grand before the inflation started, when I'm not saying Reagan was that started it, but his idea where he kept cutting everybody's taxes, at the end of his 8 years, the guy making 15 grand, if he had escalation clauses, he's making 25. Well, guess what? His tax is now what? 20% instead of 15. I mean, he gained a little bit, but not that much.
And, you know, the the whole charade in all of this, too, was as Reagan was cutting taxes, I think the government underwent its biggest explosion in control, because there wasn't anything Reagan did or would have done to limit the spread of government. And I think, you know, it was one thing in the 60s with the, you know, war on poverty and the Vietnam War and everything else. But I think in the 80s is when we really saw the government become this voracious engine. And it was masked by the fact that there were these tax cuts being handed out to people.
Well, now we're going to give, now this Biden plan is going to give, you know, again, I don't, last thing I want to be is in somebody else's bedroom. But all I know is when I was a freshman year at Marist, they started telling people, about, I mean, birth control had just been invented, and I'm not telling people what they should be doing with themselves, but the fact that 60 years later, we still have 1 million unwanted pregnancies, and oh, by the way, we got to pay people if they decide to have kids. Well, right now, having kids is pretty much your call, right?
Yep.
I mean, if you haven't figured out how it's your call, I mean, something's wrong with you. Maybe you should go to class in the park district or someplace for a night, but the idea now that we're going to pay people for child care, so, and you're never going to pay more than 7% of your salary for child care, and you're going to get the money back. Let me get this straight. Somebody decides to have 3-4 kids, which whoever the one person in the family making the money can't afford, okay, which maybe you should have thought of before you had the kids. But now we're going to say the second person has to go to work, whoever that is, because sometimes the lady's making more money than the guy. So now if they're going to go to work for the $10 an hour we're supposed to, they can only pay 7% of their income on child support, and the government's going to cover the rest. So we're going to hire somebody for $35 an hour to watch somebody's kids who's working for $10 an hour, and we're going to pay for it? I mean, how exactly does what logic tree is this one not going to have an acorn that's going to land on your head? I mean, who even thinks of stuff like this? How does this become anywhere near? So if the mother or father is making less than the child supporter, why would we ever pay that person to go to work? I mean, are we that stupid?
Well, they must think, you know, there's a lot of stupid people. Maybe there are, but there's a lot of people think this is just the greatest thing, that we have to have something like this. Why haven't we always had it? This is the thinking I hear in some crazy corners, and it makes me shake my head because it's so unbelievably unfair. Why would anybody want such a system?
So basically, you have a choice to have kids. And I'm not saying that it's always going to be the mother that's a nurturer. It seems like most of the time it is, but that's, you know, I'm not saying it has to be. So your choice is to have kids, but you don't want, you or your husband does not want to be the child care person. Okay. I guess it's like the farmer who decides he wants to be a farmer, but he hates growing stuff. I mean, and he doesn't want to do that. So he hires somebody else to manage his farm, and we're going to pay him for the guy to manage his farm. Well, if you don't want to take care of your kids, don't have them. I mean, where am I wrong here?
No, well, it's the same thing if you have a free community college. I think college should always be a choice. Once you start mandating that everybody should go to college, you've completely devalued any kind of college education, because it will be a one-size-fits-all thing in which people will get absolutely nothing out of it. But if you choose to go to college, why is that on the taxpayer's dime? I'm sorry, it's your choice. You figure it out. It's wonderful if you want to do it, but keep me out of it. Keep everybody else out of it too.
Well, I can understand that everybody should be able to make it to at the end of high school or something. So we don't, you know. So at least everybody has a base knowledge, and I don't see that part of socialism being a bad thing, Jen. I mean, to a certain point, I have. But the whole idea of paying people to have kids at every economic level now, really? I mean,
well, it's destroyed the fabric of, you know, urban life in a lot of sectors. Not specifically African American, but I'd say primarily African American. It's destroyed their family culture as a group. And I don't know how they recover from it. And the irony is this was sold as being some kind of, you know, a bailout, you know, way of keeping them afloat, and it just was sent them down the drain as a group. And I never, ever would have foreseen it reaching the depths it has. But it's become a fact, and now we have to give more money to encourage people Yeah, but
this,
more
this is not. This is anybody. This is
right. This is across the board. It sabotages any kind of effort to really rebuild a very tattered fabric. There's no way that this is going to work. Especially, I mean, you'll see it in the big cities primarily. You'll see it everywhere eventually.
Well, for somebody to, I mean, I'm not talking about an entry level job. I mean, if you're going to be a, you know, whatever, a senator someday, probably to be a senator's clerk, you don't make a whole lot of money. So I'm not saying this is an absolute statement, but the idea that somebody is going to go to, it's sort of like if I'm a painter or know how to paint, and I'm going to go somewhere and work for $10 an hour while I pay somebody $35 an hour to paint my bedroom. That's just like a really dumb decision, you think?
Yep.
But I'm not saying if I didn't know how to do it or whatever, that's one another thing. Or if I'm injured or I'm old, that I get. But the idea that somebody's going to go to work and make less than they're going to pay somebody else to take care of their kids and we're going to cover it, I don't even. So, John, what we've talked about, and this is clearly part of the market now. I mean, some of the stocks that are running up, I mean, you know, are kind of crazy, but that's the market. You can't, that's going to happen. Maybe not to this extent, but it always has happened. Sometimes I never understood the stocks were rocketing up, and I never understood the ones that were getting clobbered. But, as we've clearly have seen that a lot of what some stocks are doing well and others not, it falls where they are on the several, essentially the government largesse totem pole, for lack of a better term. I mean, it seems, have you even noticed that you're almost trying to figure out who's getting the bigger check from Uncle Sam and trying to get your money in those places? Because it's not intuitively obvious that, you know, boy, just because we have inflation, oh, by the way, go buy gold. I mean, that really almost, it's worked a little bit, but not very much. Oil's come back from the depths. Out of all the things that, you know, you might have said we're going to come flying back on is, I would never have guessed oil, but yet that has been the play all year. Now, whether it's a play from $75 a barrel, you know, I don't know about that. You know, it may be. I mean, we got down to what, 30 or 28 or something. But it's kind of hard. A lot of people like this Cleveland Cliffs. I mean, the steel companies now are out of, all of a sudden they've become the, you know, they must be raising prices pretty high, and if there's any kind of an infrastructure. I mean, again, if the government's buying stuff from you, they pay every price. So it's almost a guessing game to how much the government's buying of your crap, basically. Or if you're in the group that got all the checks from government, I'd much rather have a high end restaurant right now than an Applebee's, right? I mean, I don't matter. You agree with that or not? I don't see the family. Let's take the family out, all six of us, and go have dinner. I don't see those in the middle class, lower class price range. I don't see that as the buy right now. Again, I'm not necessarily very good at this, but I would say that the high end place is the spot you want, right? I mean, because you're looking at people's savings. The average savings has gone in the last 2 years from like $5,000 a family to like $45,000. But I'm going to say the mean is a lot different from the median there. I mean, I don't know where you can get the median. But the mean, there's people that have gotten massive checks from government and have nothing but savings, better than they have forever, paid off their credit cards and stuff. The other people, I don't think it's helped them at all, John. I mean, I don't know. But businesses are the same way. And I don't know exactly. I mean, it seems like the steady businesses, like Dan DeGenis is always talking about, you know, the guys that are doing the asphalt on the roadways or the concrete or things like that. I think all these guys are getting big checks on top of it, even though I don't think they've missed a day. So, I mean, if you could buy into the local concrete company, I think you probably would want to, but I don't know how you do it. Do you?
No, and, you know, if you add to that, say you've got, you know, a concrete company or anything else, you factor in all the other stuff with set-asides and minority-owned businesses and, you know, whatever stuff that has nothing to do with the quality of the work being done or the timing or anything else. The whole thing just devolves into this anti-competitive atmosphere where the connected are the ones who get everything, and the ones who aren't connected get zip. And when the government is the one that's behind the anti-competitiveness, I mean, this is what's really upsetting about this, be, because it's like everybody else has kind of bought into it. There is no way you'll ever see efficiency in construction or in, you name it. We can already see this in education, for example. I mean, there's effectively a government monopoly there, and the quality couldn't be more disgusting for most parents, I think. But what can they do about it? It's the monopoly, and everybody has to finance it, and there's no way to opt out of it unless you are really, sort of nervy enough and have the time to do homeschooling or whatever else. Otherwise, you're just kind of sucked into the system, and there's no alternatives. But it's become that now. It'll become that for, I think, a lot of things, just at the consumption end. You won't have a lot of options.
Well, John, you end up what you. I mean, I sound like an idiot here. When you start out life, you almost take what you start and see as sort of the status quo, and you don't really question it very much. I mean, when you and I were real young, I mean, when you had cars, there was the big three, right? And well, then you had American Motors, and you had and Jeep was still independent at the time. So and you had International Harvester trying to make those awful Scouts. So there was always a fringe, right? But basically, it was General Motors, Ford, and even Chrysler was the poor stepkid, right?
Right. They had a very wide range of offerings, DeSoto and all these.
Okay. They had Plymouth, they had Chrysler, right. They had Dodge. I mean, by and large, they were. I mean, you had three places, and you sort of. And when Toyota showed up, I mean, everybody was like, "Oh man, these guys are like they're going after the U.S. company." But I mean, it was. You started out and you thought that was competitive. Well, in fact, it really wasn't, right? I mean, if you go to the Auburn Duesenberg Cord Museum, which I would recommend anybody,
it's Auburn, Indiana, right?
Oh, in Auburn, Indiana, yeah. And if the first time you go, just look at the cars, and if you don't,
they're spectacular.
If it doesn't make your pulse race, just look at the cars.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
But
the ingenuity, yeah. The flair, wow.
But the second time you go, read all the stuff on the walls, the history of the whole era. And in the teens and in the 20s, there were like 20 car assemblers in the state of Indiana. And they don't all make all the parts. So you bought, some guy made the steering, he threw that in there, some other guy made the motor. But there was huge competition. And yet when you and I were kids, there were essentially three companies, unless you wanted to buy a Jeep. Right, or a Rambler, Nashville, or I guess you could have bought a what was the ones in Indiana, Studebaker. I mean, they were around.
Studebaker, yeah. Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
What they have 1% of the market, maybe.
Yeah, by the time they folded, it meant less than that, probably. Yeah.
But now, I mean, if somebody's growing up and Maddie Weber is a 10-year little Maddie Weber, he's going to say, "Hey, what do you mean? You got Home Depot, you got Menards if you're in the Midwest, and you got Lowe's, and that's it." I mean, you might have some other independent guy somewhere who's hanging on. Or,
True Value, you got Ace.
Well, but I'm talking about sell lumber and the whole routine. Yeah, you got people doing the hardware stuff, but by and large, I mean, if you're going to go buy lumber, I mean, can you even name another lumber store around us, Manny?
Not, I mean, there's the local ones, but
where?
Yeah, not the chains.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's some. I mean, I'm going to say there's a lot of towns that maybe don't even have a local guy. If they do, what percentage is he doing? And then when he gets out of the business, his kid wants no part of it. But my point is, we think that's normal. But in fact, 30 years ago, it wasn't normal at all. It was a lot more competitive. I could name 8 of them in the old neighborhood. There was G, there was Fox's, you write down the list.
Builder Square.
Yeah, all kinds of places. So, but I mean, now we're looking at the competitive landscape and we're saying, well, it's all Home Depot. I mean, how many people in our neighborhood, Maddie, have never been to another store except the Home Depot?
In our neighborhood, probably a high percentage.
Yeah.
But there are probably, I don't know, 20 lumber yards in Chicago that are not Home Depot.
Okay, and then if we walk down the street today, ask anybody to name one of them.
I know.
The Mayfair Lumber Company, my neighborhood lumber company up on Lawrence Avenue, I just went by the other day, is demolished now completely after being closed for about 12 years, and that's where the city's going to have its lot to store its salt trucks.
And there's a
progress.
Well, there's a place in Blue Island that if you want to go get the exotic hardwoods, that if you're your home guy and you want to use a really like solid oak or something, you can go there. There's a couple of those kinds of places, but I mean, there's really, I don't even.
Is a Crafty Beaver still up on Lawrence?
Nope. No,
nope. Never gone.
Well, the one on Montrose closed. It's a church now.
There was one on Lawrence forever, like Lawrence near Ashland.
See, now,
there?
If you went to church, you'd know it was a church now, man. Just saying.
Where do you got the lumber in this place?
Yeah, where's the lumber? Oh, wait, what did I do? They're passing the hat. I got to get out of here.
This is a sanctuary.
They want me to throw money in this. Oh, wait. I'll be Thomas. I'll throw in a 10 and pull out a 20. No, Thomas wouldn't do that. Anyway, John, thank you very much. But talk to you later in the week. SB Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 20-45. We'll be right back. Do we have Jeff or Mike?
I don't know yet. The last couple weeks, it's been Jeff. And I don't know. We'll find out.
We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. You, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures are up 550. I'm trying to get the, what am I getting here? I'm trying to get my CNBC up here so I can get the rest of this stuff, but I will have it in a second. I was reading about the Biden child care thing and I managed to toss my other page around. It didn't like me reading that one. NASDAQ futures up 47, so it looks like we have another positive day today. At least we're kind of building a little. Dow's still down 28. Again, a big mover there is Boeing down 278. It probably has something to do with the 777 not getting their... it's going to be a while before they... The 777X. So is that an extended version, Manny? I think it is, but I'm not positive. Extended range or something. But, I mean, when they start doing this stuff... Well, we'll talk about that when we're done with this, because they're... A lot of these planes are designed to be expanded now. They didn't always used to be. Over in Europe, we've got a DAX up 14, call that flat. FTSE down 29.4%. That's actually moved since the last time we were talking. CAC down 21, minus 0.3%. Over in Asia,
very slow. Nikkei down 18, call that flat. Shanghai down 1, call that flat. Hang Seng down 19, I'd say 0.1% or flat. Just as a way of review, on Friday, the Dow was up 237, S&P up 14 to a new record, NASDAQ down 9. So obviously NASDAQ was not a new record, but it's right there. Bonds down two basis points to 1.51, the Bund to minus 0.17, Japan positive 0.06, UK positive 0.76. Oil is 73.82. It's down 23 cents. Very quiet in the oil market this morning. Brent oil down 27 cents, 75.92. Natural gas, however, up 7 cents. And again, I have to believe this has to do with the power drain in the western and especially the northwest regarding the heat. But it's got to be being used for, what do they call those plants? Maybe the natural gas plants that are near a downtown area that almost like emergency plants that can fire them on real quick if they need power in the middle of the day. There's a name for them.
They have a special name?
Yeah, I think so. They're not a pop-up plant, but that's kind of what they are. RBOB is down a penny, 2.25. We've got gold down 230, 1775. Silver up 7 cents, 26.15. Copper unchanged, 428. So the metals markets are fairly dull here this morning. And we have the crypto up 1,300 is the Bitcoin, 34,135. Again, the last Monday it traded under 30,000, so it's bounced back, what, 12, 13, 15% from there. We got Forest Traffic, Weather, Sports.
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still looking pretty good on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. It looks like the Kennedy and the Eisenhower are only slow-moving expressways with a lot of red, but no accidents to report. Edens looks okay. Stevenson looks nice and quiet until you get to the Dan Ryan there, and then you'll see some build-up, but no accidents to report. Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford have been quiet all morning, too. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Off the expressway, still working on that crash from last hour at Cicero and Diversey on the northwest side, but that's the only crash on the screen, so everything else is all quiet. Weather today, not so quiet. Cloudy early, and then some storms will roll in. We'll reach a high of 77 with rain and thunderstorms in the area. Right now it's overcast and 67 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 109 today. Right now it's clear and 93. In sports, the White Sox split their doubleheader with Seattle yesterday, losing game 1 3-2 and then winning the nightcap 7-5. Sox are in first place by 2.5 over Cleveland. Cubs dropped 3 in a row after winning game 1 of their 4-game series with the Dodgers. They lost last night 7-1 on national TV. Cubs are now 3 back of the Brewers for first place in the NL Central as they need to turn things around, and they have a chance to do that against the Brewers this week. Diamondbacks lost to the Padres 5-4, and in NBA basketball, the Suns have a chance to win the West tonight. They're up 3-1 on the Clippers. Game 5 is tonight in Los Angeles. That's a 6 p.m. Arizona time tip. Chief.
So the last two series, the Cubs managed to take one from the Mariners, even though they got outscored, what, 18-2 or something?
The Marlins.
Marlins. And in the last one, they managed to get the no-hitter the first game. And but how many runs did they score? 2-2 and
they won the first game, I think, what, 4-0, and then there was not much scoring after that. I'm pulling it up here. They won the first game 4-0. Then they scored 2-2-1. So then they combined for 5 runs the next 3 games.
The what do you make of two things I want to kind of run by is this thing in Florida. How horrible is this?
It's like third world.
Yeah. And, I don't know, as you know, Maddie's been kind of, it's been one of the themes since you and I have been doing the show is that a lot of what has happened to some of the politicians on their watch, and of course everybody blames them for whoever they happen to be, really was not their fault. How many people do you think the president essentially is in charge of? Like 10, I won't say 10 million, but it's a couple million? I mean, things happen. I mean, things happen in the city here with the river going into the old deep tunnel system, and where people are just seemingly inept, and nobody does their job. I mean, Bush didn't deserve the Katrina, he was 9/11. You know, he didn't deserve.
He was both,
actually. Yeah, yeah. But he didn't deserve
you know, the idiot from the FBI not letting the thing off his desk that people were practicing planes and not landing them and stuff. He didn't deserve the person where they saw the dike weakening in New Orleans long before Katrina ever hit, and it was a leak in somebody's backyard, and it never got fixed. I mean, he didn't deserve that. I mean, what is this thing? When this comes down, we're going to find out that people reported cracks, that there were movements in this building. The one guy with the stuff under the swimming pool. We're going to find out that this was blatantly obvious yet again, and the people who wandered through there never took the next step. They saw something, didn't follow through, didn't make the phone call, didn't. I guess I'm showing
no doubt about it.
I mean, we're going to find that we find it all the time, and I just wonder why. I mean, it's as easy. My grandfather used to say, it's just as easy to do the job right as it is to screw it up. I mean, you should have your way you do business. When I first came to the trading floor, I mean, I was taught how to put, you know, back before you had computers even on the floor, how to test something, put it down on the ticket, how to pick the top piece up and put it so what we wrote only you get to see. I mean, there was a way to do this stuff. And the guy who says, you know, measure twice, cut once, is not an idiot. He's right. I mean, what are we doing? I mean, what did these inspectors gain? And I don't even think you got one more beer at the bar if you got there a half hour earlier for not. If you think a building is in trouble and you send it up the chain, what's wrong with the phone call 2 months later? Hey, did you idiots ever do anything about that building I saw? You should have some sense, some pang of responsibility that I saw something wrong here. And by the way, there's people that live here. And if the guy up in the chain is a moron, I need to push around him a little bit. I can't let the thing fall on my watch. Or do I just say, you know, I passed it up the chain, it's not my fault anymore? Is that the bureaucratic mentality we're all under now, or what? I mean, what is wrong? There's people dead, for God's sake.
Yeah, and it could be a big number. Right now it's 9, I think, but there's still, what, 150-some-odd people unaccounted for?
Yeah, well, with a fire down there, they keep saying there's people alive. I hope they're right, but I don't see how that happening.
Yeah, so it's only going to get worse, I would think, here in the coming days.
That pile of rubble, though, does not look big enough to have 159 bodies in it, does it?
I wouldn't know.
I mean, I wouldn't know either. I mean, it might go down a few stories, but... boy, oh boy, when it's your day, huh?
Yeah, I agree with your sentiment, though. I think in the coming weeks or months or however long it takes, we're going to find out so-and-so building inspector, you know, sent off red flags and warning alerts to his superiors about this building needs, you know, like, and it sat on someone's desk or someone... that department was downsized because of COVID or something happened and it caused, you know, no one to really act on it. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if we find out that happened.
Do we ever fire these people? Do we ever, I mean, how many, when I look in my business, the guy just croaked Bernie Madoff. I mean, I know that was a hedge fund. Okay. So the definition of a hedge fund is that it's a carve out from the act. So the people that were in it made the decision that they didn't want any. Essentially, we don't want no stinking regulations. Stay away from us. We're big enough people. We got the $250,000 and $100,000 a year. We're qualified investors. We don't want you guys meddling. I get that, but he also had a fake clearing firm and it was pumping out statements from a place that didn't even exist. All right, so. You would think, especially at the level at which these people were, that somebody somewhere would be operating, would know that there was a fake clearing firm out there somewhere. I mean, right?
You would think.
I mean, if all of a sudden PTI, which we could never do, found... How do you find a fake clearing firm if they're fake? If we found a fake clearing firm, and for a period of years we're sending hundreds and hundreds of people statements saying that they're... that their stuff is growing by like 10% a month. How does somebody not know that? I mean, especially if we're a guy who was the head of what? Electronic trading for the NASDAQ? He's not me sitting here doing a podcast. He was a national name. How does somebody at the SEC saying, man, I never heard of that place. where's he? By the way, who's clearing all these people? Oh, Madoff Clearing. Who the hell are they? They're not on the list here. How does somebody not see that? Then at the end of the day, get a little of this. The people who didn't want to be under SIPC are now getting paid, which means the SIPC for people like PTI, who's never had a problem with, you know, stealing money from people like that. Now we have to pay extra in SIPC to make up for Bernie Madoff that never wanted to be covered in the first place. And oh, by the way, but how in the hell if you're an SEC guy and you've been around a while, and you bump into this stuff and you do these audits all over the place, and you, if you talk to people like you should, how does nobody there know that there's a fake clearing firm out there someplace?
So the clearing firm piece, so that fake clearing firm, I mean, we know it was fake now, but was that clearing firm not like certified or audited or anything?
No.
Because I assumed that to be a clearing firm you have to be certified and authenticated by somebody, and then you're on a list of
the top of the
authorized
chain.
Clearing firm.
And there aren't very many of them, so they're called self clearing. So if you were to send a check, which you know, I hope people with the market where it is, I hope people since we have room for a few more clients, not a whole lot, but a few. If you were to send a check to PTI, you don't send it to PTI, you send it to RBC because mm-hmm. they're a clearing firm. So any smaller firm, we don't hold your money. We don't do the stock clearing. We pay somebody else to do all that, and all we do is, but we serve as clients, and we essentially, the people who hold your money are Royal Bank of Canada. I mean, you'd much rather have the money there than at PTI, right? Even though we're solvent, we're not as solvent as the Royal Bank of Canada. And, so there aren't very many of these places around. There's probably 40. But it's not like 500,
right?
You know, or 5,000, where you would never even ever there'd be names you didn't hear about. Plus, we're talking about some of the wealthiest people in the country.
I'm just saying, like, for example, my company, we were able to do scans on people's networks, and to be certified or authorized to do that, you have to be on the approved scanning vendor list, which is a public list. Anyone can Google. And there's a council essentially that does an annual audit on your technology and on your practices and on your compliance protocols, whatever. And they determine whether you're authorized to be on this list or not. Anyone can try to get on the list, but you have to get authorized to get on it. I would just assume that every sort of firm like a clearing firm or anyone that is doing something of that nature that's pretty serious work would have to have some sort of certification or authorization to the point where you can't fake it.
Right. I mean, how could somebody, I mean, what it really means is, I mean, right, if you get your monthly statement or if you get a confirm, it'll say PTI Securities on there, but it's also going to say, you know, prepared by RBC. I mean, that's where you're, those are the guys that have your money. Those are the guys that are the custodian of your 401k, all those kinds of things. So I can't believe it. Someplace, somewhere, that somebody didn't have a piece of paper drop in his lap that said Madoff Clearing, and somebody in the SEC didn't go, who the hell is Madoff Clearing? There is no Madoff Clearing. I mean, how does that not happen? Maybe it's not like there aren't pieces of paper floating around that every country club, mostly Jewish, but not all, or that everybody knew Bernie. I mean, Bernie's making a fortune. By the way, is he using his brokerage firm? Well, I don't know, but here's our statement. Look, I go, wait a minute. Who the hell's Madoff Clearing? I mean, how does that not, I mean, does anybody, do they just shut their brain off to the thing that they're working on? I mean, you're going to work on somebody's transmission, but the thing's spewing gas out of the motor and you don't tell them? I mean, I don't get, is this the mentality we have today? You can't tell me that somebody that these people didn't have another account someplace where if you came in to have an account at PTI and say you wanted to do some hedging or some option stuff, which we are, the best, I'm going to say I'm as good as anybody at, probably better than just about everybody because that's what I do. I've been my whole life. Or if you want to do corn futures or corn options, I mean, there's nobody better than my brother. He was a corn option trader for 5 years, for God's sake. So, I mean, for us to say, well, you know, you always try and find from somebody, you want to know the whole picture. So if you say, well, I want to protect my $100,000 worth of stuff, and I want to always have puts, I wouldn't mind doing covered rights, blah, blah, blah. And we put together a plan for you. And you say, okay, so what does the rest of your portfolio look like? All right, well, I got like, you know, $8 million with Bernie Madoff. Well, where is that exactly? I mean, I knew Bernie was an investment manager. By the way, where does Bernie clear through? Madoff clearing. Now, that would have set off a wreck. The fact that Bernie was the money manager wouldn't have set off because anybody can be a money manager. We are part of an investment advisor as well, and they use IB, Interactive Brokers. But it's a two-step question. Okay, Bernie's your advisor. By the way, where does most of the money that Bernie manages, who's their home clearing firm? And people are going to say Schwab. They're going to say Fidelity. They're going to say RBC. They're going to say IB. And somebody somewhere had to say, well, we're with Madoff Clearing. Wait a minute. Who the hell's Madoff? I mean, I can't believe it in 20 years or 15 years that nobody's ears ever perked up anywhere. I mean, it's a question that we would normally ask. Well, man, you say you got $1.5 million and you want to send us $100,000. Well, that's a nice account. Thank you very much. By the way, where's the other 1-4 and what strategies do you have there? Well, if it turns out that you're only in fixed income and you're 80 years old, maybe I'm going to be a little bit concerned about doing a risky option portfolio. Matter of fact, I certainly would be. If you say, I want to roll the bones with options, wait a minute, and you're in fixed income and you're retired. Well, because you're asking those questions not because you're nosy, but because you're supposed to get some kind of an idea. It's like a doctor asking you what other medications are you on, basically.
Right.
And so somebody somewhere had to say, well, gee, I'm with Madoff Clearing, really. And 2 days later, I'm with Madoff Clearing. And I look up, all it would take for me to go to my little, I could go online probably and say, list of accredited clearing firms. Hey, they're not on here. I mean, nobody takes that extra step. I mean, nobody says, boy, there's a huge crack under the pool here. Do I think it's just under the pool? Why would it be? It means the building's separating, right?
It would mean that to me, and I'm no inspector.
Yeah. So, I mean, why does nobody seems to want to take this next step? Is it because somebody smacks you if you do, or you're, because the place is hiring you, that if you go back and say your building's all bleeped up, that you're never going to get another engineering job again? I mean, I don't know. There's some pressure here someplace that I can't quite fathom. When you get to the point where we're not talking about, you know, somebody, you know, whether or not the paint looks perfect on their car. We're talking about whether the thing's safe to drive.
I mean, I can almost guarantee with this building situation that the inspection in 2019 was like right on the edge of failing, and somebody said, "Hey, you should probably look into this. This is right on the edge here. I noticed some things that are unsightly that could lead to future, you know, damage or catastrophic event if not tended to." And then COVID happens, and it sits on someone's desk, and no one goes into the office. Maybe it's even in the document, or
yeah, he's working from home, and the document's
right
on his desk.
The escalation is sitting in the office. No one's there, and no one's following up, and no one's been there. And now, 2 years later, the whole thing collapses. I'm almost willing to bet that that's what happened.
Well, but where does? I mean, I've always been like this. Maybe because, you know, it could be because, you know, my dad died young, and you know, I had to do more stuff at a young age than most people in terms of, you know, whether the house, whether heat worked and things like that. Didn't make me a heat engineer or anything, but there's always that extra question that somebody should ask, man. I mean, and you get the feeling that it's not being asked kind of anywhere. And the more we lob more of this stuff on the government, the more we're laying people off or taking people that are 55 and 60, not saying that they're better, they're surely not. We give them early retirement, and we have, before they teach the young people the stuff that they learn. I mean, it just seems like we're in some sort of a spin cycle here that I don't know if it's a good one. I mean, that's just me looking at it like an older dude.
I'm with you.
Because, I mean, I got to believe, how many times in your business did one of your clients make some comment about maybe something wasn't working, or he's noticed something and that didn't seem right, that you don't even tell him, but you go back and the first thing you do is follow up on it and say, hey, you know, Joe just said something that he was having trouble with this page or this piece of our system, and you know, that's not right. He shouldn't be having problems there. Do we have an issue? I mean, even though that probably makes you unpopular if it's
3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon and somebody has to come in on Saturday and mess with it, still, you have to do it.
You have to do it. Yep. You have to do it. And a good company will have a pathway to escalate those things right away. So they go into everyone's queue, including management. So everyone's made abreast of it, and there's a process in place for following up to make sure they get actioned.
Well, when what are we going to do? I don't want to just not do anything for the next 5 years. And at the end of the day, have all the stuff that government did and say, okay, well, fine. We ended up giving 90% of the money to the top 10% of the people and businesses. And, oh, by the way, now those guys are even fatter and happier than they were. And the people on the bottom got very little, enough to hang in there. They got the bone off the table like my dog Scruff. And we didn't accomplish anything in this whole mess. I mean, I really don't want to get there and do that again. Do you?
No, I don't.
But it seems SP Futures up 6, NASDAQ Futures up 51. Back tomorrow, hopefully, with Mike. We'll talk about the volatility stuff. We'll have him for a whole hour. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.